Hello, and welcome once again to NaturalDocRadio.com. I'm Janet Cimarelli, and I'm very, very excited today to be talking about subjects that are impacting all of us. And I'm here with Dr. Herb Slavin, and we are going to provide you with the kind of information you need in order to make informed, intelligent, reasonable decisions about your health. Hi, Dr. Slavin.
Hi, Janet. And today's topic I wanted to talk about a few weeks ago, but you said, well, it'll probably disappear.
I thought it was going to blow over, and it is getting huge. So it seems to me there's some kind of organization fueling the fire to get this so much media attention.
And we're talking about measles and the measles vaccine. And of course, as you probably heard, getting the vaccine is all settled science, and I look for that settled science.
Au contraire.
And my interpretation is that, yes, there's settled science, and that settled science is that the measles vaccine is unnecessary. So we're going to give you some facts in a moment to back that statement up. The MMR vaccine was introduced in just the measles vaccine was introduced
measles
in 1963.
Vaccine by its, yeah, okay.
And then the MMR came about later. But we're just talking about the measles. Before the vaccine was introduced, the number of cases of measles in the United States was about 3 to 4 million a year.
Okay, what kind of percentage might that have been for the number of children? Is it 10% of children,
90%? But here's
90%?
What's important to know, because this is this whole hysteria regarding the measles outbreak. I think we're up to a little over 100 people now. And today's latest news was you had some children under a year old, too early to vaccinate, coming down with the measles. But we have to put things in perspective. So out of those 3 to 4 million cases of measles a year in the United States prior to the introduction of the vaccine, only about 450 people died.
Okay. Very, very interesting aspect of this discussion. And the idea that out of those millions who came down with the measles each year, after having had the measles, their immunity to that virus was lifelong, correct?
Correct. Now, I did my own calculations, but I'm going off another article, and they figured out that the percentage of people who died from measles, of all the measles cases back then, was 0.015%.
Okay. An astonishing aspect,
right,
of this whole discussion, not something certainly to fuel the type of hysteria that's being put out there by the media.
Well, and the CDC, and this is why when you follow these things, you begin to distrust the government, because the CDC claims that around 1 or 2 out of 1,000 people who get measles will die from measles. Well, their math doesn't add up. Unless, when they use the word about, that swings a long way.
Wow.
Here's another interesting thing. When they make a graph of the death rate from measles, the incidence of measles, and of course you can't see it on the radio, but I'm going to show Janet. This graph starts in the early 1900s and goes to around the 1990s, 1900 to 1995. Now look at the incidence of measles on this graph.
Okay, and very, very interesting. You see downward, downward, downward movement with various spikes along the way.
And then
the overall picture,
right,
is very, very clear in a downward.
And then you see where the measles vaccine was introduced.
Yes, 1990.
By the time it was introduced, the incidence of measles had dropped substantially.
Okay, and see, that's something that is pretty predictable with regard to pretty much every virus, that it starts out at a very low level, the bell curve, it reaches a point, and then the viral epidemic, so to speak, begins to wane.
So, Janet, you're going to like this next point that I found very interesting as an explanation as to why the incidence of measles was dropping so precipitously prior to the introduction of a vaccine. As early as, all right, what were you going to say?
I know. What? I'm so excited. Sanitation and nutrition.
Okay, and I'm going to be specific now. As early as 1932, doctors began using cod liver oil.
Yes.
Now, do you know of any doctors now that recommend cod liver oil?
They'd say there's no science behind it.
Yeah. So they started recommending cod liver oil to treat measles and ended up lowering the mortality rate significantly. And in 1990, the New England Journal of Medicine confirmed that vitamin A supplements significantly reduce measles complications and death rates.
And do you know what so many doctors say to their patients now? Vitamin A. You have to be so careful with vitamin A. You'll have a toxic accumulation in your liver, and that is a very, very bad thing. And what that has brought about is a deficiency of both A and D. And when you think about other nations, what are they giving their children? Cod liver oil.
All right. Cod liver oil has the vitamin A and the vitamin D. So now the next question would be, it would be interesting to know what kind of impact essential oils such as oil of oregano with its antiviral qualities, or better yet, homeopathy, would have on measles as well.
Well, there is the homeopathic approach of nosodes that very specifically creates an immune response with regard to particular viruses and bacteria. So there are so many other approaches to safeguard the health of your children, to safeguard your own health with regard to the measles, that go far beyond the vaccine approach. So here you have this very specific target with the vaccine, but when you use cod liver oil and other natural approaches such as the homeopathy, what you have is a foundation of health. So it goes far beyond that particular individual virus.
Now, I want to give credit to a website called naturalnews.com. I think we both look at that website.
Yes, we do.
And put together a list of questions regarding vaccinations that I think everybody should be aware of and ask those questions of the doctor. For example, question number one, if measles vaccines confer measles immunity, then why do already vaccinated children have anything to fear from a measles outbreak?
There you go. Very, very basic first question.
If vaccines work so well, then why did Merck virologists file a False Claims Act with the U.S. government describing the astonishing scientific fraud of how Merck faked its vaccine results to trick the FDA? If vaccines don't have any link to autism, and that's what they keep saying, by the way, they say there's been no proof that vaccines cause autism, then you ask the following questions. Well, then what does cause autism? Oh, we don't know. So if they don't know what causes it, how could they rule out vaccines?
Okay, and here's my statement. When I see that individual saying the measles, the MMR vaccine or the measles vaccine does not cause autism, I agree with that statement. But is that statement correct? No. The statement is the vaccine doesn't cause autism. When you give the vaccination, which is an insult to the individual's immune system, and that individual being an infant or toddler that's not able to communicate that they have a little bit of a sore throat, that they have a little bit of a fever, that they are getting a new tooth and their nose is runny, that they have been exposed to someone with some kind of virus but have not yet begun to exhibit the symptoms of that virus. So there's a little bit of an illness and they're being given the vaccine. That whole cascade of events that insults that child's immune system has the very significant potential of causing neurological damage, rather than the vaccine having just the very straightforward effect on the immune system. What it has is an effect on the immune system, systemic inflammation, and ultimately neurological damage of varying levels.
Well, the second part of that question about if vaccines don't have any links to autism, then why did a top CDC scientist openly confess to the CDC committing scientific fraud by selectively omitting clinical trial data after the fact in order to obscure an existing link between vaccines and autism? In other words, they showed it and then they deleted it so nobody would know.
And isn't it heartbreaking that our media is just directly producing a line of disinformation rather than actually reporting a whole spectrum of facts? Let's go with facts. Let's go with research, not opinion.
Another question, if mercury is neurotoxic, which it is, it's a neurotoxic chemical, then why is this still being injected into children and pregnant women via vaccines? Why does the vaccine industry refuse to remove all the mercury from vaccines in the interests of protecting children from mercury?
Very, very interesting question, because when you talk to people and you mention mercury, then they'll say, oh, they took that out. And the truth of the matter is there are still different forms of neurotoxic metals in vaccines. And with regard to specifically the flu vaccine, mercury is still present in the flu vaccine.
Well, I'm looking at a picture of a box of flu vaccine for the 2013-2014 season, and it has thimerosal in it.
There
so
you
they
go.
They haven't removed it from the flu vaccine. Another question, if vaccines are so incredibly safe, then why does the vaccine industry need absolute legal immunity from all harm caused by its products?
Because we see time after time after time a negative response to vaccines. And I'm going to say it might not necessarily be the vaccine itself, but when a person is slightly ill, possibly without symptoms of another viral contamination, bacterial contamination, and then their immune system is insulted, a very, very significant negative effect begins.
Another question. If vaccines work so well to prevent disease, then why do some vaccines, like the chickenpox vaccine, openly admit that they can cause the spread of chickenpox?
Wow, I didn't know that. Okay.
And that's true of a lot of vaccines. That's the live vaccines, because you're passing on a live virus, and the recipient can shed it. Now, here's another interesting thing. I just want to make this point, and then we'll let you go. You hear when mainstream medicine criticizes alternative treatments, they say, where's your placebo-controlled trial? And I'm looking at the insert for the chickenpox. They say, although no placebo-controlled trial was carried out with Varivax using the current vaccine, a placebo-controlled trial was conducted using a formulation containing 17,000 PFUs per dose. In this trial, a single dose of Varivax protected 96 to 100% of women against varicella over a two-year period. The study enrolled healthy individuals 1 to 14 years of age. In the first year, 8.5% of placebo recipients contracted varicella, while no vaccine recipients did, for a calculated protection rate of 100% during the first varicella season. In the second year, when only a subset of individuals agreed to remain in the blinded study, 96% protective efficacy was calculated for the vaccine group as compared to placebo. So it seems to be very good from one particular study, but they didn't study the vaccine that they're giving out now. So, and that, of course, that doesn't get to the risks associated with the vaccine.
Very significant risks associated with the varicella vaccine.
On their insert, it says, post-marketing experience suggests that transmission of vaccine virus may occur rarely between healthy vaccinees who develop a varicella-like rash and healthy susceptible contacts. Transmission of vaccine virus from a mother who did not develop a varicella-like rash to her newborn infant has been reported.
Wow.
So they say you shouldn't give the vaccine to immunocompromised individuals, pregnant women, newborn infants. And they say avoid using aspirin-containing products if you've had that vaccine because of the risk of Ray syndrome. I mean, so the point is, you know, vaccines aren't completely safe like you're being led to believe.
It's very interesting because I unfortunately don't have a source or a reference for what I'm about to say, but one of the things being reported with regard to the measles spread was that it is possible for someone to have had the measles vaccine and be a carrier able to infect non-vaccinated individuals. They're not expressing any of the symptoms of the measles disease, but they are able to spread it. So that was very, very interesting to me. And that's kind of along the same lines of what you're saying with regard to the varicella virus, varicella vaccine.
And remember the chart I showed you earlier. So this question sort of refers to that. If vaccines are so great for public health, then why do these historic public health charts show nearly all the declines in infectious diseases took place before vaccines arrived on the scene?
Well, it's very interesting because when you start investigating the whole polio thing, again, that's where I got the information about the bell curve typically associated with a viral disease outbreak. And that when the Sabin and Salt vaccines were ultimately introduced into the population, the disease had already begun to decline.
And the questions we're bringing up are all documented. You can Google them and you can see for yourself. Another example, and this was reported recently, if vaccines are perfectly safe, then why did at least 13 people recently die in Italy after being vaccinated?
Very serious questions.
I remember
here.
Reading that. I don't remember the vaccine that they were given. Do you remember which vaccine that was?
I don't remember, but I do recall that.
Another question, if vaccines are so trustworthy, then why did a pro-vaccine group, Janet's going to like this one because this gets into the conspiracy theories that she likes. Why did a pro-vaccine group, you know, this is stuff that you wouldn't even think about, and yet they're bringing it up here. Why did a pro-vaccine group in Africa recently discover, to its shock and horror, that vaccines being given to young African women were secretly laced with abortion chemicals?
I read that.
You find that plausible?
It's very, very interesting. I think last week, Henry Kissinger was testifying before a congressional committee, and there were protesters that upset the hearing. But if you investigate some of Henry Kissinger's perspectives with regard to controlling world population, you can understand that the potential for contaminating vaccines. So in the name of supposedly doing something good to support health, what's happening is another aspect having to do with how your body works is being addressed. And here I go with that particular bit of information, putting African women aside. Dr. Slavin, 25 years ago, how often might you have seen a fertility clinic operating?
Well, that's true, but one might argue they didn't have the science behind it. Not that the need was there. Maybe the science wasn't there. Now they've got drugs to help women become pregnant.
Okay, all right. Very good that they have drugs that they can use to assist fertility. And my thought process is, if it's just a very, very small percentage of the population, then those fertility clinics would be located in maybe 10 large cities across the country. I think you can find a fertility clinic in nearly every city of the country now.
So you're suggesting that maybe not only in Africa that the abortion chemicals are being put in vaccines?
Well, I'm not necessarily suggesting that specific abortion chemicals are being put in vaccines, but I am suggesting that the widespread, almost uncontained use of vaccines across the population, that it's blossomed in the past 25 years, going from maybe 12 vaccines that children received from birth to age 13, 14, to over 40 different vaccines or 40 vaccinations, being given to children before they hit puberty. And here's my other observation. How many people did you know being treated for allergies? How many people did you know of diagnosed with asthma? And I think, in my mind, I've drawn the connection between a diagnosis of asthma and how children's immune systems are interfered with, beginning, unfortunately, in infancy.
Well, you know, I never, none of us really even think that way as far as could they be actually trying to control populations. But that's been a theme of countries for centuries, I think, at least the last century, where they're worried about population growth and they want to control it. And would it be beyond them? The real question is, would it be beyond them to do something that inserts chemicals and vaccines to help achieve that end?
Okay. And then going off topic from vaccines to genetically modified organisms, what do we see in animal studies regarding GMOs? What we see is fertility compromised, spontaneous abortion in the animals, and dead or dying offspring. So we're being told that genetically modified organisms in our food are meant to be there in order to feed the exploding population on the planet. But isn't it interesting that one of the effects in animal studies show reducing the ability to procreate in those animals?
Another question, if vaccines are backed by solid science, then why do some vaccine inserts openly admit that they are backed by no clinical trials? For example, there have been no clinical trials adequately demonstrating a decrease in influenza disease after vaccination with Flulaval. And it says on their insert exactly that. And yet you're being told, or you're expected to say, it works, use it. There's absolutely no question. It says here, for example, a higher number of breastfeeding infants whose mothers received Gardasil had acute respiratory illness within 30 days of post-vaccination of the mother as compared to infants in whose mothers received a control substance.
Wow. And I'm saying, what breastfeeding mother would choose to have a vaccine? That's not a good decision.
Pediatric use. Safety and effectiveness have not been established in pediatric patients below 9 years of age. We're talking about the Gardasil vaccine, by the way. And geriatric use. The safety and effectiveness of Gardasil has not been evaluated in a geriatric population over 65. I'm not sure why they wouldn't want the Gardasil vaccine, but maybe they would. I don't know. Gardasil is for the human papillomavirus.
Okay, so perhaps there are older women, or and they're even giving it to males as well, that have had cervical dysplasia, and their doctor is telling them, well, here's a vaccine that you could use to prevent the virus causing that cervical dysplasia.
I would say, and here's the interesting thing, when you go get a vaccine of any type, the flu vaccine, Gardasil, or anything, unlike when you get a prescription from the pharmacy where they give you the insert for the drug you're getting, they don't give you any information on the vaccine. Why don't you ask the doctor or the healthcare provider giving you the vaccine, can I see the insert that comes with that vaccine? It might be a real eye-opener.
A very reasonable request, because you do want to see, when you pick up your prescription, you want to see what the drugstore at least has to say. And sometimes that isn't as complete as the insert that you get with a pharmaceutical, but it gives you a little bit of insight into what some of the potential issues might be.
You know, I haven't gone to a pharmacy to see how they're handling the flu vaccines, but I wonder if there's any informed consent that the recipient receives from the pharmacy prior to getting the injection.
One of the suggestions that I have to make for people would be to visit a website called vacinfo.org, vacinfo.org, and you'll get a little bit of an insight into what some of the risks are, as well as how the vaccines are made. And in addition to the thimerosal that Dr. Slavin mentioned, there is aluminum and some other contaminants that for sure people would be objecting to having those substances injected into their bodies.
Another point, if vaccines are so safe, then why does the Gardasil insert sheet admit that the vaccine causes seizure-like activity, headaches, fever, nausea, and dizziness, and can even cause those injected with the vaccines to lose consciousness and fall, resulting in injury? And I think I have a patient, was it that vaccine? That's the Gardasil.
I have a family member who exhibited that list of symptoms.
But I have another patient, I think it was the flu shot she got, and then she developed Guillain-Barré. I mean, this is...
not at all uncommon.
And all that information is clearly printed on the inserts of these vaccines, which you probably never get to see.
So that list of potential reactions to the Gardasil vaccine, when you think about it, the underlying issue in the person's body contributing to manifesting those symptoms is inflammation. What has the medical community agreed upon with regard to an underlying causative factor for a whole host of chronic diseases, diseases associated with aging, that so many Americans are diagnosed with? Inflammation.
Another question. If vaccines are backed by so much science, then why do they frequently admit that there are really no studies of the vaccine for the very groups of people who are often injected with it? And these statements are coming from the inserts that come with the vaccine. For example, on that one, it says, for Gardasil, there are, however, no adequate and well-controlled studies in pregnant women, because animal reproduction studies are not always predictive of human response. Yeah, they've done these studies on animals, and then they want you to say, well, if it's safe in animals, maybe it's safe in humans.
very troublesome in information. And people, these are factual statements that people need to know in order to make informed decisions.
Now, this question, I have my own question about it. It says if vaccines are so safe to give to pregnant women, I don't think they ever recommend giving vaccines to pregnant women, do they?
They recommend pregnant women get the flu vaccine.
Oh, really?
It horrifies me.
All right, so they say here, for example, then why do the vaccine insert sheets openly admit most of them have never been tested for safety in pregnant women? In fact, and this vaccine we're talking about is the Varivax vaccine, that's the varicella. This vaccine admits the effects of the vaccine in fetal development are unknown.
Unfortunately, I do believe there's a lot of information about contracting some of these diseases during pregnancy. One of the things that I did want to say is you mentioned the population studies don't match up with the population for whom the vaccines are intended. And that's pretty much true across the board. The FDA accepts studies and let's say for blood pressure medication to be introduced into the marketplace. And the studies that the companies may provide the FDA demonstrating or so-called demonstrating safety possibly have been done in a population of 25 to 35 year olds, typically a population not exhibiting issues associated with elevated blood pressure. It's usually 45, 65. Those are the age populations where blood pressure tends to rise. So you're introducing a pharmaceutical to the marketplace, but it has not been tested on the population that will ultimately receive that medication.
Okay, if vaccines achieve absolute immunity, and I'm not sure if that's what they claim, but I think that's what people think, then why are as many as 97% of children who get sick are getting sick from the disease they were already vaccinated against?
Wow, I didn't know that.
Well, that may be tricky.
Let's hear that.
If 97%, well, if let's say you're dealing with 100% group of children that have been vaccinated, and some of them are going to get sick from the vaccine, they're saying that of all those children that got sick, 97% had been vaccinated and 3% didn't have the vaccine. It'd be interesting to know what percentage of the unvaccinated stayed healthy.
And it's very, very important. I mentioned, you know, when the connection with the MMR vaccine and the potential for developing a neurological problem. Let's evaluate the nutrition status of the child receiving an MMR vaccine. Suppose they'd had a lot of sugar. Suppose they were given soda. Suppose they were given an artificial sweetener, particularly the I can only think of the brand name, Equal, that has a potential for neurological injury. I mean, there are so many unknowns in this discussion. If the child's health status is compromised, the acceptance of the vaccine within their body may or may not cause injury and cause immunity.
Now, we are definitely seeing a big movement in this country to avoid vaccines. And this is probably, the next statement is probably one of the major reasons, I would think. If vaccines are totally safe and effective, because that's what you're being led to believe, the doctors on TV are saying, it's safe, go ahead and take it, then why did a five-year-old girl recently die from the very strain of flu she was just vaccinated against? Remember hearing about that?
Yes, I do.
And not, she's not the only one. I remember there was a healthcare worker in a hospital that got the flu shot and she died. And if the mainstream media claims to report honest, unbiased information about vaccines, I haven't heard them claim that. Then why was there a total nationwide blackout on the news of the CDC whistleblower admitting vaccines are linked to autism?
Isn't that amazing? A complete blackout.
Well, I hadn't heard about it. That's how good it was.
Right.
This was one of the most censored medical news stories of 2014, and the CDC's criminal cover-up stretches back more than 12 years. So, I mean, this is a problem. And
this
that's
is
why...
very important. Criminal cover-up.
And then, lastly, why does the CDC falsely claim that all vaccines are completely safe and effective when in its own website it still lists the toxic chemical ingredients used in vaccines? They openly admit that in the vaccines there's mercury, formaldehyde, MSG, aluminum, antibiotics, and other chemicals that are still used in vaccines. And I have a printout from their own website stating that the aluminum, antibiotics, egg protein, formaldehyde, MSG. I don't even know why they would put MSG in a vaccine.
Very scary stuff. So people know to avoid it in their food, but they're not avoiding it in their vaccines.
But here's what they say. It's used as a stabilizer in a few vaccines to help the vaccine remain unchanged when the vaccine is exposed to heat, light, acidity, and humidity. Why do they put formaldehyde in? They say it is used to inactivate bacterial products for toxoid use. These are vaccines that use an inactive bacterial toxin to produce immunity. It is also used to kill unwanted viruses and bacteria that might contaminate the vaccine during production.
That might contaminate. Oh, so there's a potential for contamination during production of the vaccine.
And then they say most formaldehyde is removed from the vaccine before it is packaged. I wonder how many people have heard that there's been an association with cancer and vaccines. And that has been shown and published. That was the contamination in the virus of the simian virus number 40 associated with leukemia. But that seems to be lost in the conversation. Last question. If the vaccine industry cares so much about children, then why does it call for the arrest of parents and the breaking up of families of unvaccinated children, begging for the states to seize custody of those children at gunpoint while incarcerating the parents in prison?
Whoa, that's heavy.
Well, it happened to Dr. Horowitz, didn't
yes, it? Yes, it did.
You know, the story he told, he said his son had hurt his arm or broke his arm, and he went to an emergency room. And he didn't vaccinate his kids because he's aware of all the risks. And I think they forced him to vaccinate the kid, or they locked him up so they could vaccinate
the kid.
Well,
they took custody of the child over his protests. There is so much in this discussion to talk about. Dr. Slavin, you're talking about the potential relationship to the development of cancer. And again, what do we see over the past 70 years? Just rising cancer rates. Rising rates not in line with rising population. So outstripping the increase in population. And then the last thing that I do want to say with regard to the CDC, they did say this year that if you received this current flu season's vaccine, which did not match up with the most commonly experienced flu virus, the potential for you getting the flu in a more serious way was there. So if you got the flu vaccine and contracted the flu illness, then you were at risk for a more serious illness and disease expression.
Well, I mean, you're getting mixed recommendations, because some people would say, well, even though it's the wrong match, take it anyway because it's going to help you.
Right. That's what they're saying in the media.
Is that scientific? Does that make any sense at all?
Well, here's one of my bottom line statements, that it seems as though all common sense has fled the medical community.
Okay. And we've talked long enough today, but I want to just finish off by saying this last thing. Parents concerned about their vaccinated children potentially contracting measles from unvaccinated children may want to consider the fact that the bigger health threat is technically the vaccine, not the disease itself. Comparative data provided by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System reveal that nobody has died from measles in more than 10 years, while at least 108 deaths reported to the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System during the same time frame have been linked to measles vaccine.
Dr. Slavin, very, very important information for our listeners, and I want to tell everyone we're very glad you tuned in and look forward to you visiting naturaldocradio.com again in the future. Bye-bye.